Welcome to Chair Chat, an online web series hosted by me, Jamie Harrison, the chairman of the South Carolina Democratic Party. Our goal in this series is to begin to look at political leaders, activists, and people involved in politics in a three-dimensional manner. We will move past the political caricatures to get to know the individual. So now, let's chat. Today's guest is a professor, a jazz lover, and an activist. Some would even call him a hellraiser. Perhaps no one fits that description more than Dr. Cornel West. With degrees from both Harvard and Princeton, he's had a most varied career as a leading voice on race matters, an author of several best-selling books, and surprisingly, an actor appearing in The Matrix, The Matrix Reloaded, and 30 Rock, where a running joke had him mistaken for Questlove. I'm pleased to introduce Dr. Cornel West. Dr. West, welcome to Chair Chat.
My dear brother, it's a blessing to be here in South Carolina, Dizzy Gillespie country. Yes, I feel the spirit and the soulfulness.
Oh, I hear it. It's so good to have you here. Good to have you in the rocking chair and drinking some lemonade with me. You have this amazing career, this amazing life. Is there something that you want to do that you just haven't done yet?
God, I don't think in those terms. I think more in terms of gratitude, all the things that came my way that I didn't deserve, you know, very much so. I think if I had one dream, it would probably be to see a world where there was no poverty, see the children smile, and see workers who had dignity, women not dealing with domestic violence, gay and lesbian brothers and sisters not having to stay in closets. And having self-respect and self-love widely distributed and enacted among black people.
Oh, amen to that. Amen to that. Let's talk music for a moment. You have so many interests, but music seems to be one of your favorites, right?
Absolutely.
I think music really has helped to change the world, change America in many aspects. Do you think music still has that type of effect now?
Well, I think, you know, we live in a market culture, so you get market religion, you get market education, and we get market-driven music. So a lot of the richness of the music has actually been flattened out. Mm-hmm. You don't get the deep soulfulness, you know, you don't get that soothing sweetness against the backdrop of the darkness. You know, when Aretha sang, when Luther sang, Donny Hathaway sang, when Sly played, when Mahalia stepped to the pulpit, stepped to the lectern and sang at Pilgrim Baptist Church in Chicago, it was a soul stirring. And I ask young people these days, now I know your body's being stimulated, but is your soul being stirred?
Yeah.
Oh, there's a difference.
There's
a big difference. Now, you still have some great singers, don't get me wrong.
Who's your favorite?
Out there right now? Kim Burrell can really sing. Raheem Devon is a wonderful singer. Of course, I was blessed to do an album, work on his album. D'Angelo is a near genius in so many ways. He's deeply rooted to the tradition. But you know, if I'm dining out, I'm going to turn on some Sarah Vaughan, though, man. I want the real thing. Rashford and Simpson are the emotions, the Hutchison sisters, you see.
Nothing beats the music that when you hear it, you can hear the first chord, and it reverberates all over.
Absolutely. Well, who would be your favorite these days?
That's a good question. I don't know if I have one.
Interesting. You got to go back to the earlier generation.
I really do have to go back to, you know, I was just in the car. I'd taken a road trip with my communications director the other day, and we were talking about music and just the power of music. I love listening. I love listening to music. And not that Michael Jackson was, but for me, when Michael Jackson passed away, I cried that day. He was, as Eddie Murphy said, he's a musical genius.
Oh, he was the greatest entertainer of his generation, of many generations. Yeah. You're absolutely right there, though.
But I really felt like I lost a good friend.
He's a very troubled brother, though.
He had so many issues and so many problems. And the sad thing, Dr. West, is that we have so many people walking around here today, people who are beautiful folks. But because of things that happened in their childhood, because of just mistreatment, because of the lack of mental health facilities and treatment, that they have these issues and they have these problems. And it's something that we as a society need to take seriously. And I think we're seeing it with all of these tragedies and travesties that are coming out, that people with some of these illnesses are impacting more than just their own surroundings now.
You know, part of it is, I think, that in our market-driven culture, it tends to evolve around fame and celebrity status. Mm-hmm. And so much of fame is toxic and is poisonous, because it gets at your spirit and doesn't allow you to be true to yourself. You view yourself through the lens of others. That's the worst thing you can do. And so on the one hand, people aspire to be famous.
Exactly.
But if you're not spiritually fortified, then the fame is going to pull the rug from under you. I mean, that's one of the reasons why even in our politics, we got market politics now. That's why, as you know, I'm here for Brother Bernie Sanders. He shatters the market politics. He says, look, I am who I am. I'm for real. I'm standing for poor and working people. I'm cutting against the establishment. I'm concerned about jobs and living wage, all the various universal health care and so forth. And people are hungry for the real thing. They talk about Donald Trump because he's got authenticity, and he does. He is true to himself. The problem is that the self that he's true to is rather childish and adolescent.
Yeah.
It's egotistic, yeah. Narcissistic. It's just spiritually underdeveloped.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you want authenticity and integrity. And, of course, that's what I see in Brother Bernie Sanders. He's for real, but he's also willing to be for right in terms of putting the focus on poor and working people. And I speak really as a Christian, too, that I think in the end it's about what we do for the least of these.
I had the distinct honor of interviewing Senator Sanders for for the first Chair Chat interview that we aired. And we just had such an amazing time. And in that interview, I learned that he participated in the March on Washington. I learned about his participation in the civil rights movement. And that it's continuous. It didn't stop in the 60s, but he's continuing the fight. The situation with Senator Sanders and the situation that erupted with early with the Black Lives Matter movement, it seems like that they are now on the same page. They're now moving forward. My assessment was that they weren't on different pages before. They were just speaking different languages, maybe.
Well, I think that the younger generation who just wanted the politicians across the board to be accountable.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't know that much about Brother Bernie Sanders.
Exactly.
And so he's one politician among others. And, you know, I agree. I think politicians ought to be accountable. There's no doubt about it. And sometimes politics of disruption is one in which you try to make them accountable, Bernie Sanders responded directly with a very powerful racial justice platform. And I think you're right. I think there's no doubt that he's very much committed to the humanity and decency of black folk, like he's committed to the humanity and decency of everybody.
Yeah. This is not your first foray into presidential politics.
No, that's true.
In the past, you've supported Bill Bradley.
Brother Bradley, another brother of integrity.
Ralph Nader.
Brother Ralph. Much more radical, and he's got his own integrity too.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's true.
And
Sharpton.
And Al Sharpton.
And Brother Sharpton. Sharpton on the integrity tip. He's not on the cutting edge.
Oh, that.
But he's got a courage. He's got a vision. Very much so.
So what was the commonality when you take a look at who you've supported? You even initially supported President Barack Obama as well.
I mean, I don't want to forget Brother Barack. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I did 65 events for him and, you know, did it with joy because it was a historic time and right here in South Carolina.
Right here in South Carolina.
Yes, I had a wonderful time with my brothers and sisters of all colors here in South Carolina.
So what's that thread that flows through in terms of how you get Dr. Cornel West's support? What is that thread that is needed in order to do that?
Yeah, I think it's probably best exemplified in the question that I asked Brother Barack when he called me in 2007 and asked whether I'd join his campaign. And my question was, what is the relation of you and your policies to the rich legacy of Martin Luther King Jr. and Fannie Lou Hamer?
Wow.
You see, that's the question. And that same question I have for Bernie Sanders and the others. Will you keep a focus on poor and working people? Will you keep a focus on racism, poverty, militarism, and materialism, which is a spiritual disease, you see? And I think the legacy and memory of Martin Luther King Jr. is so crucial that the real future of the country depends on how we respond to his witness.
Is there anybody on the Republican side that you see could get to that point?
Be tied to the legacy of Martin King in the way in which I want? No, I wouldn't be persuaded. I don't see any of them. No, they're just too tied to top 1%. They're too tied to corporate elites. They're just too tied to Wall Street. I think when we live in a country in which 1% of the population own 42% of the wealth, and yet 40% of black children live in poverty, you see, that's spiritually obscene, morally profane. And I don't see the Republicans speaking to that issue.
Well, you know, here in South Carolina, we have this unique situation where we have, there's a lot of diversity, or there's some diversity on the Republican side. And Nikki Haley, who's the first Indian American governor here in South Carolina, and Tim Scott, who is the first African American senator from the state, and they love to talk about, just recently, I think Governor Haley talked about this you know, her role in terms of taking Confederate flag down here in South Carolina, but this concept of the New South. And in that speech, she talked about the increasing equality for all. I have pushed back on them in that the rhetoric sounds good, but the actions don't. They are not living up to those actions.
That's exactly right. I mean, this, as I recall, she's the same governor that said that because none of the CEOs had raised questions about the Confederacy flag, she thought it was all right. I said, well, why don't you just take a look at some of the folk on the chocolate side of your state and listen to see what do they have to say about that flag? Are the voices of the few CEOs from outside of South Carolina, do they have more weight than all of black voices in the state of South Carolina? So that's just the beginnings of a critique. It's not just of her, but it's of so much of the Republican Party.
Given that the primary is February 27, do you think there's enough time? Because you know black folks are also very loyal folks. They take a minute in order to build that trust and loyalty in them. Do you think there's enough time for Senator Sanders to really turn that corner and make the case?
As I recall, when I came down here in 2008, Sister Hillary Clinton was far outstripping Brother Barack Obama in the polls until Iowa hit.
That's true.
See, it's a politics, things can shift. Well, you got some folk in Bernie Sanders' camp, Sister Simone Sanders, and Brother Marcus Farrell, and Brother Ernest Boston, and others who are going to help turn things around. I think there's going to be a real upset in February, because I actually think that Bernie Sanders is going to win. I think the Clinton machine going to break down. The Clinton machine is full of brilliant, clever, smart folk. There's no doubt about it. And they've got a long, rich history and heritage. But I think it's running out of gas. And I think once that happens, Biden is carrying too much on his soul. We got to pray for him and his family in terms of the death of his precious son. And Bernie Sanders' message of justice, of social justice, is will continue to not just hit deep, but hit wide. So I'm just projecting and predicting, but I'm in it to win it. Well, I do pay tribute to you in terms of your tremendous work as citizen, because whether we agree or disagree, the fact that you take time out of your life to be committed to public interest is something that is noteworthy in a moment in which so many people are just obsessed with privatistic orientations.
Well, thank you, Dr. West. I appreciate that. That means a whole lot to me.
Well, you know what I'm talking about, too, though. I'm telling you. No, we live in a world where everybody's for sale, everything is for sale, and if you're going to opt for public interest, you got to get out beyond yourself.
Yeah.
We learned that in Vacation Bible School, brother. And that's for real. They wasn't teaching for nothing.
You were in Missouri, getting arrested in protest.
Oh, that marvelous new militancy with those young brothers and sisters. Yeah, how do you break the back of fear? You see, once you break the back of fear, you're a free man or woman.
Well, so much has happened, and it's almost, and again, you know, we kind of define things as movements and all, and some would even argue that the civil rights movement never ended. It's just continued and it's changed forms.
And
we had the situation here, Walter Scott, the Emanuel Nine, situation in Baltimore. Just recently, James Blake, the former tennis star in New York. I don't know if you saw the video of him getting tackled.
I heard about it. I didn't see it.
How do you think this situation of police brutality, militarization of our police force is sort of desensitizing, desensitivity within that situation. How do you think we come to some resolution?
I think the Obama administration is doing some decent things in terms of trying to make the police more accountable with the cameras and what have you. But the ultimate form of accountability is sending police to jail when they kill somebody. Until we reach that point, we haven't gone far enough. As long as a policeman can think that they could pull you and I aside and mistreat us and maybe end up shooting us and not have to pay for it, we got a problem. Now, he or she deserves a fair trial, you see. But you and I know, you know, this happens every 28 hours for less. Almost 8.5 years that a young black woman or man or a brown woman or man is shot by a police security guard, and not one has gone to jail. See, that's a key sweat moment. Something just ain't right. Something just ain't right, man. And people say, are you anti-police? No, I'm not anti-police. I'm just for justice.
Yeah.
I'm just for
justice for everybody.
Justice for everybody. Absolutely.
Well, I know, you know, and you mentioned this, it's something that the Obama administration has been doing right in terms of, and I know you've been an outspoken critic on a number of issues, but what are some other things that you would say that you think the administration has done right, particularly maybe over the course of the past few years in this new term?
I think that its attempt to wrestle with this Iran deal was a very powerful move that was in the fight against the conservative Jewish lobby. I think that was a very important moment in the Obama administration, no doubt. What else would it be? I think when he gave the Presidential Medal of Freedom to Toni Morrison, I thought that was magnificent. And when he gave it to Sonny Rollins, I had a Coltrane moment. I said, yes. But the tidal Wall Street, the massive surveillance, the drones dropping bombs on, killing 231 innocent children. You know, I can't remain silent about that. I don't care what color. As you know, in the end, it's not the color of the person. It's the quality of the compassion that they have for the poor and the scope of the courage they have to tell the truth.
Have you ever thought about running for office yourself?
No, that's not my calling.
Yeah.
No, God didn't call me to run for office. Sometimes I run from the police. but no, I've been called to try to tell the truth and bear witness and teach and lecture and try to inspire as much as I can, you know.
Well, Dr. West, I really, really enjoyed this conversation. My one last question to you is, what do you want the legacy of Dr. Cornel West to be?
The legacy would be that the highest honor he ever received would be being the second son of Irene Clifton West, and that he tried to love in a world that was so cold and cruel, but he lived life with a smile and with a little bit of style.
I love that. Poetry to the end. I love it. I love it.
I salute you, my brother. I salute you.
Dr. West, thank you so much for being a part of Chair Chats. And thank you, because you're always welcome at Chair Chats.